1-800-449-8686. And now, Phil Hendry.
All right, news from Hollywood right now. We'll bring on Margaret Gray, a syndicated columnist. Newlywed movie star Julia Roberts was branded a husband stealer by her new husband's ex-missus. Newlywed movie star Julia Roberts is branded a husband stealer by his new wife's, by her new husband's ex-missus, so says the London Sun. Roberts wed cameraman Danny Motor on Thursday, but shattered Vera Motor warns it won't last. The blonde makeup artist says, "I'll never be able to forgive Julia. She's a husband stealer. But it won't last with her anyway. She'll be looking for a new husband within a year. Danny has a roving eye, too, and he won't change. He cheated on me. He'll cheat on her." Vera Motor adds, "Julia's been desperate to get him down the aisle, and she's got her wish. I never wanted to lose him, but I've given up now. But looking at the warnings her ex has given, Benjamin Bratt couldn't stand the goldfish bowl existence. Will Danny be able to? I very much doubt it." So, with Julia Roberts marrying this man and being branded a wife stealer, I thought we'd bring on Margaret Gray, nationally syndicated columnist, with her column that appears each day, A Little Bird Told Me. Margaret, how are you?
I'm very good, Phil. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. What do you make of all of this, Julia Roberts stealing the husband of this woman?
Well, I think there's a good way to look at it and a bad way. I think there is a dose of reality that a lot of women need, and that is there are a lot of very beautiful women out there that are going to attract your husband. And I think there are women that are just not going to be able to compete with that. There are a lot of marriages that are on just as shaky a ground, so that when a man sees a woman who is breathtakingly beautiful, like Julia Roberts, she's absolutely gorgeous. She is the dream of a million men in this country, if not more. She is just, she's a dream come true. Do you think that Julia Roberts can't have her pick of men? The answer is, of course she can. Are there anyone, is there anyone out there that believes that Julia Roberts, all she has to do is wiggle her finger and most American men will come running? What woman can compete with that? The answer is few, if any. Now, that's the bad news, but there is good news. I think a woman who loses her husband to a woman who's much more beautiful and much more exciting, I think there is a way out of this psychologically, and I would say be happy for him. Be happy that he's able to go to bed every night with something that is a little bit more exciting, perhaps, than you were. Be happy he's found something that is a little bit more, that is more fulfilling for him. Be happy that...
Be happy that he's cheated on her? Be happy that he has...
If you're a woman, Phil, that can't compete with that. Look, what woman can compete with Julia Roberts? The answer is who? Hardly any. What woman is going to be able to compete with that? If your husband naturally wants to run away with a Julia Roberts, and what man wouldn't, be happy your husband has fulfilled a fantasy. What man is going to say no to that? And let me tell you something, Phil, and I've seen Julia Roberts. Let's just say I've seen her in a bathing suit, because we were at the same swim club for a while out in Malibu. She is all that. And I can tell you that from just seeing her in a bathing suit, in a pair of panties and a bra. She is gorgeous. What man is going to say no to something like that?
I would.
You would?
Yeah, I love my wife. I love my family. I'd never cheat on her on my wife with Julia Roberts or any other woman. Granted, she's lovely and she's America's sweetheart.
And you wouldn't sleep with her if you were given the opportunity.
No, I would not sleep with her if I was given the opportunity. And you make every man sound as if he's shallow.
I'm trying to tell the women, forget about being able to compete with a Julia Roberts. If he wants to sleep with her, be glad for him. Be glad for him. Be happy that his expectations about, for instance, about oral sex are finally fulfilled. Be happy.
Finally fulfilled.
Yes. And Phil, I would ask you again. You wouldn't sleep with Julia Roberts.
I'm a married man. I would not sleep with Julia Roberts.
All right, what if Maria were dying? What if your wife were...
No, I would not...
Hold on for a minute. What if your wife were dying from an illness, and the doctors told you the only way you could save her was to sleep with Julia Roberts, to have sex with Julia Roberts?
If the only way for me to save my wife...
If the only way, Phil, to save your wife was to have sex with Julia Roberts.
I don't think that that's a fair thing to say.
No, if... Come on, Phil, now stay with me. What if the only way to save your wife from a deadly illness, from a deadly skin and flesh-eating illness, was to have sex with Julia Roberts? Think, Phil, think fast.
I'd have sex with Julia Roberts.
All right, there. That proves my point. That proves exactly what I'm saying. Women don't understand that when your husband cheats on you with a beautiful woman, be happy for him. If he cheats on you with a dog, then you have to look inside. What did you do wrong? There's nothing you did wrong. She's just better looking than you. If your husband cheats on you with a woman that's just flat ugly, then there are some things that you might be able to correct. But if he cheats on you with a much more beautiful woman than you, be happy for him. And
all right, and so my wife is dying from a deadly illness, and I sleep with Julia Roberts to get her better. My wife's supposed to feel good.
She's alive, isn't she, Phil? And if she was dying from a flesh-eating illness, I would hope that she'd want you to sleep with Julia Roberts.
Let me ask you something, Margaret, because this comes up time and again when you're on my show.
Yes.
How does flesh-eating illnesses suddenly come into what we're talking about here? I was talking about Julia Roberts, the fact she is now living with a man and will soon marry a man who is another woman's man, and I'm suddenly saving my wife from a flesh-eating illness by sleeping with Julia Roberts.
Look, Phil, all I'm saying is this poor girl and all women must accept something that I don't like to talk about. Let me tell you something. I'm sensitive to Earl's feelings, but Frank was married when I met him. My husband, Frank.
Right. Well, let me give our phone number out.
All right.
1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. If your husband cheats on you with a much better-looking woman, be glad for him, as the man who is now with Julia Roberts, his ex-wife, should be glad for him. Although she's not, Margaret. She says that Julia Roberts is a crap bag, and so is her ex-husband.
Well, I'm just saying, it's not right. I think she needs to be more magnanimous.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Shaw. All right, go ahead.
All right. Frank was married when I met him, and at that moment, you could almost see it. I was doing continuity on the Big Valley television show, and Frank was doing some producing, and he saw me, and that was it. We were sleeping together that afternoon, and even though his wife was a very attractive and successful woman in her own right, once Frank saw me, do you understand? Forget it. Believe me, she's still soaking in for alimony. But once Frank saw me, it was over.
So you're much, much better looking than Frank's ex-wife.
Absolutely. And I don't say that with ego, I say that with fact. Once Frank saw me, then what he was living with wasn't worth it. And I remember Erla being hurt. I remember her calling the house and threatening me. And I said to her, aren't you, and I said this still 30 years ago, and it's interesting to see how ahead of my time I was. I said to her, can't you be glad for Frank that he's with me now, that he has found something that is a little bit more fulfilling in the bedroom and a little bit more fulfilling just as a social partner? Why can't you be happy for him? So, and to know, when you look in the mirror, you can say, at least Frank's with something better looking than me now. So Julia Roberts is that kind of woman as well. She's absolutely gorgeous. She's wealthy. But even that has nothing to do with it. She could go into Denny's, Phil, and take any man in the place. She could wiggle her finger at any gas station. Look at any man, and that man would be hers, all right? She can have any man. So the good news is when your husband cheats on you with a gorgeous woman like Julia Roberts, or like me, for instance, be glad for him. This is good. Be happy that he's been able to step up in class and fulfill a lot of his fantasies about unbridled sex. Women should learn from Julia Roberts and me. I would say that to Vera Motor and all women whose husbands have dumped them for beautiful women. Go and see all of Julia's movies. Try to emulate her. Look at how she dresses. Look how easily she can bring on the tears. She is tremendous. Because I'm about finding solutions, Phil.
All right, Margaret Gray is with us. Our number, 1-800-449-8686. The big news in Hollywood, Julia Roberts is going to marry some guy, and the ex-wife is not happy about it. But in Margaret's opinion, if your husband finds a woman better looking than you, if he's found something, stepped up in class a little bit, be happy for him, and don't be bitter. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
1-800-449-8686. And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry with Margaret Gray, nationally syndicated columnist. Let me ask something, Margaret. When a man leaves his wife for another woman, it is a... And if a woman leaves her man for another man, it is a very traumatic thing. Nobody is going to say, well, I guess I'm happy for him that he's found somebody better looking than me, or she's found somebody better looking than me. It's just unrealistic. I can understand if maybe there's somebody who is unhappy.
Well, Phil, you're going to have a lot of unhappy people. We were talking about Julia Roberts and the fact that ex-wife is upset with her husband going to Julia Roberts.
Right.
I think... But let me ask you something. Is she crazy? Does she really think her husband's going to stay with her when he's got the opportunity to go off with Julia Roberts?
Well, I told you that I would stay with my wife, but then you told me that what if my wife was going to die from an infectious disease? Well, and I guess that means that Julia Roberts, I'd have to sleep with her.
That's right. You said it yourself. You'd sleep with Julia Roberts.
If it meant saving my wife from a flesh-eating disease, as you put it, then yes, I would. But I don't see what any that's got to do with anything. 1-800-449-8686. Clarence, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I agree with you, Phil, on that matter, because that's the difference in lust and fantasy. If this man left his wife because he had a fantasy of Julia Roberts, then he's fulfilling his fantasy. But how long do they last?
That's exactly what I'm saying. No woman.
How long do they last, Margaret?
How no woman can compete with that?
Who's competing? We're talking a difference in love. If he committed to his wife, first of all, he would be in love with his wife, not having a fantasy about Julia Roberts.
Even if you're in love with your wife, you will still want to sleep with Julia Roberts.
No.
Yes,
I don't agree.
Oh, wait a
because
minute.
If you're in love, L-O-V-E, that means that person is the apple of your eye and not a fantasy like of Janet Jackson or Julia Roberts.
Look, if you are in love with a woman who has been bedridden from a flesh-eating disease...
There's a
and
difference.
If you can't have sex with you, then you would sleep with Julia Roberts.
I'd probably sleep with the girl next door.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
That's the difference. I mean, yeah, men are that type of creature.
So you just admitted it. You would sleep with Julia Roberts.
No. That's only because my woman can't give it up.
What do you mean sleep with Julia Roberts? Because my wife, here you go.
There's a difference in sleeping in love.
So are you married?
No, I'm single at the moment.
All right. What if you were married? Okay.
Okay.
And
I would be in love.
And your wife was dying and Julia Roberts wanted to go to bed with you.
Okay, she wanted to go to bed with me. I'm listening
to
the words.
Would you go to bed with her?
Only because,
you
I'm going to say, my emotional state at that time, who knows what you would do. I can't say yes or no.
There
because if Julia's
there right
every
there.
Day comforting me through my
if
wife's
Julia
illness.
Julia is every day on the phone saying, Clarence, get over here. Let me ask you.
I would tell her, I said, Julia, what kind of slut do you look what I'm
what
going through? My wife is ill.
What if
you have no compassion for me?
What if your wife's jaw was wired shut?
Well, we have to feed it to her, too.
There you go. That's what I'm saying. And
what if his wife's jaw was wired shut? What's that got to do with anything?
Thank you.
Three guesses.
I don't get the point in it.
And the first two, you don't get it. If
no,
wife's
that's no
jaw,
point in what you're trying to make out of flesh eating. And
if your wife's jaw were wired shut, you wouldn't sleep with Julia Roberts.
What's that got to do with whether the guy...
Now we're going downstairs.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah, I get it.
It's not all about sex, Margaret. That's what I want
to
say. It's not all about sex.
And
this guy obviously wasn't too in love with his woman. You know what I'm saying? To the point that this girl...
I think you can be in love with your wife, desperately in love with her, but realize... that if Julia Roberts says she's ready to go and she's ready to rock and roll, you're all over that like white on rice. Now, let me tell you something.
Don't tell me
you'd mind it if Julia Roberts went out on a date with you, brought you back to her hotel room, didn't know where you were, and mistook your face for a bar stool. Don't tell me you wouldn't like that.
Well, first of all, we were on a date, as you would say, on a date.
I had
to agree to go out with her.
What if she mistook your face for a saddle?
Will you stop?
You only get one shot.
Margaret, I love you.
You think it's real funny. Let me tell you something. And I say this to every woman out there. No man will stay loyal to any woman when Julia Roberts opens that big horse mouth of hers, shows all those teeth, men start thinking, and they start thinking in ways that I don't think you'd appreciate.
What if your wife's jaw was wired shut?
Yes.
Mike, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hey, Phil. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. It's great to listen to you. I'm in Wichita, Kansas. And, Margaret, you're crazy. I'm going to tell you something. It's misplaced confidence, and it's crazy to send the message to women out there that for a man to go ahead and sleep with somebody bigger and beautiful is okay, and that they should praise them for doing it. That's crazy. I mean, I'll tell you right
you
now,
know,
listen to
crazy.
You force...
It may not be a very good message, but I'm talking about
you
reality as
Phil
opposed
to... You force Phil to an answer that I didn't want. Well, that wasn't a fair question.
No.
And two, if you ask me, I'm the person to ask.
Go
if
ahead.
Julie Roberts walked through the door, I'll tell you right now, I would not sleep with her.
Uh-huh. Well, doesn't that make you a little odd?
Pardon me?
Doesn't that make you a little odd?
No, it makes me very, very thankful for what I've got, and I'm very happy with my wife. She's not drop-dead gorgeous, but, Julia Roberts is much prettier and much more famous and so forth, but
I think
you're way
easy.
Off base by thinking that every man, 99
Mike,
or whatever.
Mike, what's your wife look like? Just give us a thumbnail sketch. How tall is she?
She's 5'4", about 105 pounds, beautiful brown eyes, and blonde hair.
All right, now you said she's not drop-dead gorgeous, so is her face trucked?
Pardon me?
What did you say?
I asked him, is her face trucked?
No.
What do you mean, is her face trucked?
Julia Roberts is a 10, she's a 9'5". You're making the point that that it's okay to sleep with somebody that's better looking or better physique or whatever than your current situation you're in, and you're wrong there. You are totally wrong.
Mike, all I'm saying is if your wife were laying in bed and she had tuberculosis and she was spitting up blood, and in came Julia...
Why does it have to be that? See, you keep saying that.
Exactly. One, first of all, if she's coherent, I would have this discussion with her and propose to her the situation I'm dealt with. But I'll tell you, if it was a life or death situation, no, I would not sleep with Joy Roberts to save my wife's life.
But wait a minute, you said that you'd have to discuss the situation with her, so you would consider
I would talk to her and say, this is what we're dealing with, honey. If I sleep with Joy Roberts, you're going to live.
Well, what do you think she's going to tell you, Mike? She's going to say, go ahead and sleep with the bitch because I'm sitting here spitting up blood.
That is an absurd question. No, I'm done with these idiotic questions. What if your wife had a flesh-eating disease?
I can't believe that, Phil.
You know, and the fact is that here's Mike trying to say he's loyal to his wife. If it would save your wife's life by sleeping with Julia Roberts, you know...
Sure, tell me about it, Phil. You'd hold your nose and go ahead and do it. Is that it?
No, I wouldn't hold my nose.
You'd let your wife lie there and bleed from gunshot wounds, and you wouldn't bag Julia, isn't that right?
No, I'd take him to emergency room.
You would let your wife die from a gunshot?
No, I would take them to emergency room. I'd get emergency help. Period.
Do you hear what we're saying here?
It's amazing what modern medicine does, and the psychological medicine that you're trying to feed the world out there off of the Phil Henry Show is...
All right, let me ask you a question. Would you sleep with Tom Cruise to save your wife's life?
No.
You'd let her die rather than be called a fag. All right.
You know, you're an idiot, and no sleeping with Tom Cruise or Julia Roberts is going to save anybody's life, okay? And the fact
I'm
that
on your side.
You know, I'm just...
I mean,
what do you think about that?
Well, I think you're an idiot. 1-800-449-8686, 1-800-449-8686. Margaret Gray is saying that any woman whose man leaves her to be with Julia Roberts should be happy for him because he's stepping up in class. And it is obvious that most men, when given the choice between their wife and Julia Roberts, would take Julia Roberts. 1-800-449-8686. So if your husband does that, be happy for him. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show.
Here's Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Ann Hayes, too.
Now, wait a minute. You can't say that Ann Hayes left Ellen DeGeneres because of Julia Roberts.
Oh, yes, I can. And I've got a number of people who can corroborate that. Phil, what you need to understand is Julia Roberts has a magnetic hold on a lot of men, and yes, women, too. She has beautiful legs. She has the face of an angel. She has lips. That were I a man, I would fantasize in some fairly disgusting ways about those lips. and a body that is absolutely gorgeous. And I think it's very naive of you to think that if she came over to your house and by mistake thought your face was an ottoman, then...
Would you please not go down that road anymore?
Phil, I am trying to...
Yeah, would you just please not go down that road anymore? Here is Jenna on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, Jenna, go right ahead.
Hi, I would just like to comment if the lady will let a lady talk. I personally don't feel that this man should have left his wife for Julia Roberts because marriage is a sanctity. It is a moral thing. It has something to do with better or for worse. Have we all forgotten about that? It doesn't matter who you are or where you came from. Let's remember, Julia Roberts obviously has come from a lower standpoint. She's nothing to me.
You have to understand, Jenna, that among men, and this sounds crude, but you have to understand, the fact that she can put her legs behind her head, that scores points with a lot of men. And so
a man would leave his wife.
It's Julia Roberts, for God's sake.
Listen, lady, I wouldn't leave my husband for Brad Pitt. I don't care who you are. It doesn't put you above. It doesn't make you any better. I'm an attractive woman. I've been compared to a lot of attractive women. And I know my husband would not leave me for anybody for any reason. It wouldn't matter if I did get hurt, if my face got mangled. My husband loves me. It's about love. It's about commitment. You don't leave somebody simply because they have a higher rank. It's morally unethical. It's wrong.
Yes, it's wrong, but it happens. And I'm saying rather than judge that man, be glad for him that he is with a woman who, if she mistook you, all right, you don't want me to use the statement.
Excuse me. How many men has this woman been with? Why should he be grateful? She's going to dump him after a certain amount of time, unless, of course, he meets somebody else that he thinks is better looking than she is and then dumps her for someone. I mean, now, what do you think about that?
You know something? Being compared to Aunt May doesn't make you hot. And being a person that...
Are you talking about Jenna?
Yes. She said she was hot.
I didn't say I was hot. I said I've been compared to some of the beautiful women in Hollywood.
Yeah,
I'm an attractive woman, but
yeah,
that doesn't mean that I would expect any different from my husband. Does that make sense to you? Do you understand what I'm saying? Marriage is a sanctity. That's the bottom line. It's for better or for worse. It doesn't mean that you get tired of looking at your wife and you move on to a higher rank. That's not what marriage is about.
Jenna, that's my point. Darling, what I'm trying to say, if your face was strained through a steering wheel, your husband wouldn't just leave you for Julia. He'd leave you for a toothless you. My husband would not leave me
if my face went through a windshield. I guarantee you that.
Your face was strained through a steering wheel.
Yes. And I think Jenna's a lovely girl. I think you have some very good points. And I think you should be grateful and be happy for your husband as you see him driving away in a privately chauffeured town car. All right? Jenna?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening.
All right. So you wouldn't be grateful seeing your husband driving away in a privately chauffeured town car and his belt coming out the window?
No, I would not.
Oh, my God.
Nor would he if he saw me driving off with Brad Pitt, who I don't particularly think is attractive anyway. Everybody thinks Brad Pitt's attractive. Everybody thinks Julia Roberts is attractive. She's done one good, Pretty Woman was the only movie she did. That says a lot. She's proven to everybody, as far as I'm concerned, that she is a hoe.
Jenna, I agree with you because how many guys has she been with in the last 5 years?
Well, she's been with numerous amounts. She can't keep a guy. That's my point. She can't even keep a man.
So a woman isn't allowed to have boyfriends. I see.
She's trying to prove something else. Okay, I've dated a country western singer. I've done this. I've done that. Now she's got to prove that she can steal somebody's husband. It's like, you know, she's trying to prove herself again. And her record is just going to keep going up. And I just think it's a bunch of BS. I don't like Julia Roberts. I don't think she's a good actress. I don't know why they call her this mega superstar personally.
Now we get down to it. I don't think
she's that hot.
She's been with Liam Neeson, Kiefer Sutherland, Dylan McDermott, Jason Patrick, Benjamin Bratt, this most recent guy. Now she's dating this gardener.
He's a cameraman. He's not a gardener.
He's a cameraman. Okay, well, it sounds to me like...
Nothing should make you happier than seeing the back of her head going up and down as the town car drives away. And I would say, with all due respect to you, you're a lovely girl. But if your face was strained through a steering wheel...
Oh, please! Hey, Jenna, Jenna, I got to thank you for your call. We got to get moving. 1-800-449-8686. Christine, hello.
Yeah, well, these guys have no clue of what life is about. These guys are in a totally different category. They're making these other people look, other men look bad, and men aren't animals.
Well, I tried to make the point. I tried to make the point, Margaret. You say, I would not leave my wife for Julia Roberts. I would not leave my wife for her. And you said, what if my wife was dying from a flesh-eating disease and sleeping with Julia Roberts would save her?
You'd have to have some kind of, you know, if you really loved her, you'd have respect and... You wouldn't even think about that. It'd be the end of your world.
I said, Christine,
you're just a complete idiot.
No, you shouldn't even be on here.
You're in a category of men that are very small and in a different area. You're considered the slime of the earth type of people.
I'm asking a very good moral question.
Do you have a wife?
Are you married? Do you have any girlfriend or any kind of wife or anything? Can I ask you a question?
Okay, go ahead.
If you were dying from gonorrhea and it would save your life, your husband sleeping with Julia Roberts, would you let him sleep with Julia Roberts?
I wouldn't have to make that choice if I'd let him, because I wouldn't be with a guy that would do something like that.
What if you were dying from gonorrhea?
Oh, shut up.
You'd be brought to tears if you saw your husband show up at the Oscars with Julia Roberts on his arm. I'm saying, feel good for him.
You know what? You're going to die a lonely man.
I'm a woman.
Oh, sorry.
It shows you how bright you are.
Oh, come on now. You sound like a guy.
No, I'm a woman.
Well,
I've got big hands.
Okay, then you're going to die a lonely woman.
I don't have to wear a girdle. What?
You must have a lot of insecurity problems.
No, I have no insecurity. My husband, Frank, married me in 1972. He was a married man. He was married to a woman who was 20 years older than me, and it was over for them. When he saw me, that was all he needed to know. That afternoon, we were sleeping together.
Wow.
And you know what, Christine?
You don't have a clue, do you?
My ass is tighter than your lower lip.
I feel sorry for you.
You feel sorry for me that I've been married, happily married for 30 years?
No, I just feel sorry for you that you have this kind of attitude towards life, because you're just obviously not a very happy person.
I'm very happy, but I'm saying, if your husband was driving off in a chauffeured limousine with Julia Roberts and you saw both her legs go out the window...
Yeah, okay. And the whole thing about her mistaking my head for a bar stool...
Right. You wouldn't be happy for him? Of course you would, darling. Of course you would. I'm Margaret Gray, and this has been A Little Bird Told Me. News from around Hollywood and around the world.
This took your face for a saddle.
That's right.
All right, well, thanks a lot, Margaret. More baloney from the world of Hollywood. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
I like Janice as being kind. We're talking about Anna Kournikova, and I said, she ain't that good looking. I said, what about Jennifer Capriati? She says, yeah, the bigger, heavier, heftier Italian. Sure, she's great, Phil. All right, so I don't know what I'm talking about. 1-800-449-8686, the Phil Hendry Show. But that ain't new. And Michael Jackson says that the reason why his album's stiffing is because of racism in the record business. Apparently, he said that Tommy Mottola is a racist and that he's devilish. Mr. Mottola is the president, I believe, of a record company that, I guess Sony, that controls the distribution and the promotion of Michael Jackson's albums. And the most recent album of his is one called Invisible. And it was. It didn't sell, and that's where that's at. See, oh, Invincible is the name of the album. So he went out and he, you know, called Tommy Mottola racist. Look, there's only one act I know of that can still sell albums consistently, And they've been doing it for over 30 years, and that's the Beatles. I mean, I seriously, every time you turn around and come out with a Beatle anthology, it's number one. What more proof do you need? I'm not talking about, you know, I am not talking from the standpoint of a baby boomer here who, you know, is sort of nostalgic and pines away for those days. I could care. The Beatles were always, like, in my book, good, but not my favorite band. And Rush, that's the other band that sells, and that one I don't get. We're going to have to call Art Bell on that one. Hey, Art.
Let's go to another call. Hello, you're on the air here on Coast to Coast Overnight.
Yeah, Elgin Rush still sells albums. That is
fascinating. That's out there, man. I don't understand either.
I mean, what's going on with that?
Rush? I know. Our former producer, Mike Schaefer, he's buying all of them himself. He's got, like, warehouses full of Rush albums. No, but really, the Beatles... The Beatles are still number one. If the Beatles are still number one, what does that tell you? That there's something wrong with music. Now, I hear a lot of bands that I like. I hear a lot of bands, a lot of modern bands that I like. Maybe I just like songs. I don't know if I like whole albums, but I hear a lot of music that's contemporary that I like, but apparently nobody's buying this stuff, or they're doing what my kids do. They MP3 and they download and they don't. I asked my kids the other day, I said, so what is it? Are you guys getting most of your music off the computer, or does music suck? And they said both. I'm talking about my 14 and 16-year-old.
Yeah, music sucks, but still, it's easier to get it off the computer.
So they're downloading it straight off the computer. Is that because the record sales are down? Is it because also music sucks? I don't know. But Michael Jackson, cat can't sell a record. So now he says it's racism because people, you know, don't want to. Why? Because he's too white? I mean, I don't understand. So here's the thing. The Beatles still sell records and have never not sold records. They've never not sold an album. They always do well. Even Michael Jackson can't compete. And when they talked about Michael Jackson being one of the hottest selling acts of all time, which is true, he is. In fact, at one time, I think he had more top 10 records or something than the Beatles ever did. Even he experiences kind of a tailing off or a slump in album sales. The freaking Beatles never, never. Now you got, there's an album out now where there's bands doing covers, and I think it's from, what movie is that? It's from I Am Sam. The soundtrack is all Beatle cover music, and it's everybody. It's Fiona Apple, it's Pearl Jam, it's all these bands covering Beatle music. It's Wallflowers. And you know what? It's better than the versions the Beatles did. So I would suggest, if you like the Beatles songs, you didn't like the band, go get this I Am Sam soundtrack. So anyway, Jackson says it's racism, and maybe it is. I don't know. I know that I don't like Michael Jackson because the guy is he's too white for a black guy. That's my major problem with him. Or he's too dark for a black guy. Something's wrong with him. He's too dark for a white man, too white for a black man. He's his own race. Michael Jackson has invented a brand new race. We got blacks, whites, browns, yellows, and reds. Michael Jackson is the first beige person. And there will be more. Yes, the black man, and the white man, and the yellow man, and the red man, and the, have I got them all? And the brown man, and now the beige man. He's finally done it. He has finally invented a new race, new anthropological. It's not beige, it's sort of sand. It's kind of sandstone. He's more of a, I think he's eggshell. You know the white man and the black man. You know the brown man and the yellow man and the red man. And the eggshell man is here now, too. And we can just get one girl who looks like him, put them together. They're sort of the eggshell. Now you know. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. All those moon men with the big heads and the big eyes, and that they all descended from Michael Jackson. I mean, everybody makes fun of the guy's looks, and everybody talks about the plastic surgery, and everyone, but every time I see him, I want to cry is what I want to do. I feel bad for the guy. I'm not kidding either. I feel bad. If I were him, I'd blow my brains out. I couldn't get up in the morning and look in the mirror at that. Unless you could get some anthropologist to categorize you as the new first member of what will ultimately be millions of eggshell men. And that way, you can at least say, you know what, I'll go out and get treated. I'll get my face and my kisser done the way he is. And I'll look just like him, only I'll be bald and he'll have hair, and I'll be eggshell man number two. I'll go out and get my skin all blanched out, although it wouldn't take much with me, and then I can get on the black wig, and I'll put the nose down to a point so you can freaking cut cheese with it. And I'll grow a tail. For all I got, this guy will graft a tail on. How much oddball can this guy get? Hey, I got an idea, Michael. Why don't you have him sew a tail on? Good sweet Lord. He's going to put a tail on. I got it. You know, the one thing that you would think he would have thought of and that he would do is he would find a Beverly Hills plastic surgeon that could give him Vulcan ears. Am I right? Look at the guy's face. All he needs are those pointed elf ears and two gills on his back. I mean, yeah, shark. I don't know. Just a tail. No, all he needs is a tail and two of those pointed pixie ears. And he can do that whole thing with the fingers and go, live long and prosper. Prosper. Live long and pratfall. Sad, man. If I was him, I'd either blow my brains out or graft a tail on and just, now I'm eggshell man. I forget it. Never mind. I didn't mean to go that long on that. That was stupid. By the way, Phil, I got an email here from Cliff. Hey now, Phil, I just got my shirt and I love it. I was afraid that the logo on the back, and he's talking about the Ted's of Beverly Hills bowling shirt, I was afraid the logo on the back would be an iron-on. It's hard to tell from the picture on the website, but to my surprise, it was first quality stitching and a good price, too. I've priced bowling shirts. I know what they cost. Thanks again, Cliff. Huh? That's the Ted's of Beverly Hills bowling shirt. High-quality stitching, baby. Ain't no iron-on, press-on jazz. This is a beautiful, beautiful bowling shirt, and it's only available on our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Go there. Go to our souvenir shop. You can get the Jay Sano Citizens Auxiliary Police T-shirt. You can get the Ted's of Beverly Hills bowling shirt. You can pick up all of our Best Of CDs. It's all there. And remember, when you buy a Best Of CD, all the money goes to My Friend's Place, a resource center for homeless and runaway kids in Hollywood, California. While on our website, get a backstage pass and get all of Thursday's top 100 shows of the 100 calls of the year show, although we only really had 17 calls, but we call it the top 100 calls. 17's enough. So you can get on the website and get those, or you can hear them individually listed as well. And you do that with a backstage pass. It's only $6.95 a month. It's auto-renewing. You can buy it for a month. You can get it for 6 months. You can get a yearly subscription. Only $6.95 a month. And you can, you can run with the bull. It's Phil Henry Show.
This is the Phil Henry Show.
If I get a little bit of a laugh, go to the WorldCom website and take a look at the press release that they have posted on their website for today. And one of the, I shouldn't say a laugh, because I'm sure that the man feels this way. The CEO of the company is a guy named James Sidgemore. He took the job in late April 2002. So a lot like Robert Mueller, I don't know whether you could hang this on him, because he's sort of late to the game. The quote is, I want to assure our customers and employees that the company remains viable and committed to a long-term future. This in the face of reports that it's sliding into bankruptcy, that there will be charges against the company for fraud, that SEC the SEC has petitioned the court to ensure that no documents get destroyed. I mean, this is a company that isn't in any shape at all or any position to say anything about its future, it doesn't seem. We're going to bring on right now Robert Green. He's the former CEO of a company called Nexus Industrial, I should say. And they went through much the same thing back in the late 1980s. And that was a problem with books. I know that your company filed Chapter 11, Mr. Green. Your comptroller was arrested. Your CFO was arrested. Basically, they unplugged the shredders. And Mr. Green has written a rather interesting book called You Can't Take It With You, Tales from the Other Side of Corporate America. We have him on the show to sort of shed some light, if you'll pardon the expression, shed, Mr. Green.
I can tell you that's a word that's going to be popping in and out of people's minds a lot.
But just to shed some light on the nightmare that is the current scandals on Wall Street.
Well, Phil, as of today, a $4 billion WorldCom scandal has erupted, and we need to restore faith, obviously, the American investor, and 17,000 people are going to be out of work on Friday.
That's right. I understand that one of the cost-cutting measures is to take 17,000 people and just put them on the street this coming Friday.
Right, but I want to go through this a little bit with you. I know what they did. They inflated their profits. They lied about the money they were making. We did the same thing in the late 1980s. It was a heady time, the late 1980s. But let me just turn this around a little bit for you and for your listeners. It's a funny thing about life. You get a wife that wants more. You have children that want more. You know, I was in that position.
Well, you knew that your company was over-reporting profits, correct?
Late in the game, I did know that, right.
And you knew that your company was essentially cheating stockholders. You yourself fired, I'm looking at the press release that you let 3,500 employees go in March of 1989, isn't that right?
What I did was wrong, and I'm sorry for that, what happened to those workers, but I want you to picture something, and you can hear the phone that I'm on right now. This is a cordless phone that I picked up at I don't know where it was, a Circuit City. It's not the kind of telephone that a Robert Greene would have used 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago. It's not the kind of telephone that I had in my offices. Today I find myself with very little. And
that is a bad telephone.
Well, I'm gonna paint a picture for you. I came out of Indiana State with an MBA and a desire to improve myself. I started Nexus International. At one time we had a United States government contract. I met a woman, my wife. I met her in Atlantic City. She was working one of the buffets there at a hotel. She was in a couple of shows, and I would say this with great respect. She was put together.
You were attracted to her.
I was attracted to her. I married her. We had three kids. We made more money. And here's what happens. And this is what happens to the guys at WorldCom, and this is probably what happened to the guys at Enron. Suddenly now she wants more. A Mercedes isn't enough because there's a guy at the office with a Rolls. A 4-carat ring isn't enough because she wants a 5 or a 6-carat. The kids want to go to a private school, you see? And so...
Well, Mr. Green, if I can interrupt you, okay? And can I call you Robert?
Call me Bob if you'd like.
All right, Bob. This is all about your life. I want to get into the particulars of the manipulation of books, the cooking of books.
No, but I'm telling you, this is really the heart and soul of what happened at WorldCom. You get kids that want to go to a private school. You got a 5,000 square foot home. Now it's got to be 10. Now it's got to be 14. You got a summer home. You got an apartment in New York. And you get to the point where you pull yourself through your door at night and you want to put your fingers in your ear because here she goes again. You see what I'm saying?
And I know, in other words, she's making demands. The family's making demands.
That is correct. Today, Phil, in the year 2002, I've got health problems. I have a duodenal ulcer. I've got sciatica, which hurts like a son of a bitch, if you'll pardon my language. Ask my wife if she cares. No, she doesn't care. She cares if the pool house is built. So while you want to crucify the guys at the top,
Well, wait a minute. All right, I'm going to give her a number out. 1-800-449-8686. We're talking about WorldCom with Robert Greene, a former CEO of a company that went through similar problems. Your company is gone now, right?
I've got nothing now. My company is gone. I'm on a book tour. I got a wife. And again, I still got the same wife, and she still wants more.
Are you telling me that WorldCom, that Enron, that Adelphia, that Tyco, that all of these companies went belly up because they're CEOs that had wives and kids that wanted more?
I am saying to you something that I'm hoping your listeners can appreciate.
What about the 17,000 guys that are on the street this coming Friday? What about the 3,500 people that you put on the street in 1989?
So that is typical of the American public. They always want to look at the workers, the line workers. These are good people. But the fact is, they're a little bit like gypsies. They don't have any...
All right, well, see, now that, to me, is an insult.
What is?
To call these 17,000 people will be on the street on Friday because of some guy cooking the books, because you're telling me that his wife wanted a bigger diamond ring.
When I reluctantly let 3,500 people go back in 1989, I found out that these people could go across the street and get another job. Do you think any of them want to have a cup of coffee with me now? Do you think that there's loyalty now?
You fired them.
No, but I had no choice. I had a business that was no longer mine. It was an animal I was trying to control. It isn't me. It was Tom Perica, who was our business manager. It was Marianne Compton, who was our internal accountant, they had their hands in my pockets. And
correct me if I am wrong. You seem to be putting the focus on the pain that's being felt by the guys at the top.
Once the hive is, like bees, once the hive is finished on a tree, the bees go on to the next without turning back. What happens to me? What happens to the guys at Enron? I'm going to tell you a little story, Phil.
No, but you're putting the focus on the pain that...
Because there is real pain at the top. Because the guy who gets fired on Friday, that line worker, that assembly guy, he goes over to AT&T, he's going to go over to Verizon, he's going to go over to Pac Bell, he'll do what he has to do. What happens to me? Let me tell you what happened to me. The day I got the word that this man, and I just saying the guy's name makes me want to vomit, this guy, Sullivan, who was cooking our books, I went into my office, I closed the door, I took a bottle of brandy out of the desk, I poured myself a drink, and I pulled out of a leather valise that I had in a filing cabinet behind me, and I pulled out of that leather valise a Ruger Red Hawk. That's a .454.
That's a firearm.
That's a gun. Yes, sir, it is. I put the gun on my desk. I called my wife. And, of course, the first thing I'm hearing from her is, I'll never forget it, did you change the reservations for Mexico and all of this? And I just hung the phone up on her. And I thought about putting the barrel of that to my head. And I'll tell you one of the things, if you want to hear a funny story, I've got a Degas print in my office that was right behind my desk. And as crazy as this sounds, I thought, if I blow my brains out, half of them are going to go all over a print that's worth about $8,000. And I said, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm not giving her the satisfaction, and I'm not giving those kids the satisfaction. So I pressed on. And I don't doubt that that's going on at WorldCom right now. You got a lot of guys and a lot of offices, and nobody hears them weep. No one hears the screams coming from those offices, the screams of agony. And nobody rushes into those offices to make sure that they don't have a Luger, a Ruger, a Glock, a 9mm, a Red Hawk, anything sitting on that desk, waiting for them to pull the trigger and send their brains right out onto the street. Now, for me...
All right, I don't want to interrupt you, but you're telling me...
That is the silent pain that goes on in these CEOs' lives at an epidemic level, and you want me to sit here and start feeling bad about 16,000 guys are going to hit the bricks and go across the street to Verizon on Monday. I'm sorry, I can't do that.
So, in other words, what's happened at WorldCom, the real tragedy is the CEOs that are...
You got a comptroller and you got a CFO that are on the street. Those guys are probably going to be in a jail cell if they don't pick up a small caliber.
All right, well, let's forget about whether they're going to blow their brains out.
But it's a high possibility.
All right, our number is 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. I'm talking to Robert Green, who is telling us a story of how he contemplated suicide the day he found out that the books at his company had been cooked. And we are, of course, talking about WorldCom, but you keep going back to the poor CEOs, but the workers, the guys are going to be on the street.
Well, there you go again.
Yeah, but...
Well, you're doing it again. You're going back to these 17,000 guys. What about them?
17,000 people will be on the street.
I almost put what's left of my brains all over an $8,000 Degas. You understand what I'm saying? I almost shot myself.
All right, 1-800-449-8686 is our number. Robert Green, former CEO of a company that went belly up back in the 80s because of cooking the books. I don't know if you know what happened at WorldCom today, but they have reported that they cooked up about $4 billion worth of profits that just simply don't exist. They actually lost money last year and in the first quarter of this year. They're in deep, deep trouble. The people that I care about are the 17,000 men and women that will be hitting the bricks on Friday as a result of, quote, cost-cutting to help save the company. But I'm hearing Mr. Green here talking about him putting his brains on a print he bought in Spain with his wife. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
You, Bob, Robert Greene with me, whose company went through much what WorldCom's gone through. Do you have a distaste for workers?
No, I do not, Mr. Hendry. Please don't characterize it that way.
We're talking about 17,000 guys that might hit the bricks on Friday, and you're talking about the time you almost blew your brains out.
You know something? I happen to be an individual who creates jobs. I'm a guy who goes and creates a business, and then I got people hanging all over me wanting work. They want to get promotions. They want this and they want that. And then some guy cooks the books on me, and I'm alone in the office with my Red Hawk 454. Did anybody come in and try to take the gun away from me? No. That's what I'm saying. That's what's going on at WorldCom right now. The CEO of that company, whatever his name, John Sidgemore?
Mr. Sidgemore.
Let me tell you something. They find him tomorrow morning with a barrel of a Magnum in his mouth and the back of his head missing. What are you going to think then?
I'm going to think that the guy went through some pretty tough times, and I'm going to think that the man was a victim of circumstance, and I'm going to think it was a tragedy, but I'm also going to be mindful of the many, many of us.
No.
I'm going to be mindful of the many, many of us who still have to work and press on and help this country grow. 1-800-449-8686.
That's not a lot of storybook stuff.
No, sir, I don't think it is. Here's Art. Go ahead, Art.
Basically, the 17,000 folks getting laid off, they're not getting golden parachutes, $2 million a pop to make the transition a little bit easier.
Golden parachute? The guy's been arrested. What do you mean golden parachute?
If you can't do the time, don't do the crime. That's the basic concept there, buddy.
That may be true, but see, I didn't do any crime, and I'm sitting here, and the company's bankrupt.
Hey, if you can't manage your chip, then, you get what you pay for.
All right, well, and if it just so happens that we got to put 17,000 guys on the street, tough luck for them.
Hey.
Yeah.
They got to put two in their kids' mouths. They don't have $4 million to go and, worry about getting a job.
Well, it's too bad.
Wait a minute. What do you mean it's too bad?
Yeah, it's too bad. Where do you work?
What do you mean it's too bad?
Well, he doesn't show any sympathy for me.
Why should I?
I almost blew the back of my head all over an $8,000 print.
Yeah, of a Degas from Spain.
Yes, sir. And you don't feel no sympathy for me?
Not in the least.
These 17,000 grunts are going to do just fine. What about me? And that's what nobody thinks about.
All right, Art. I think, Art, you're saying what a lot of people are feeling right now.
You know, Mr. Hendry, if you get off that working class hero kick for a minute and listen to what I'm saying, what about me? And what about all the guys there in the offices at WorldCom and Enron and Tyco? And
their brains going all over their offices.
That's right.
1-800-449-8686. Here is Teresa on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello, Teresa.
Yeah, I want to ask him, wasn't he aware when his wife was demanding that ring that he was buying for her that maybe the company was using money wrong?
No. No, I wasn't.
Got to turn your radio down, Teresa.
Okay, I'm sorry. But, I mean, this guy's ridiculous.
Okay. Do you know anything about business?
It was your company.
Do you know anything about...
break.
No, but I didn't... I got a guy working for me, cooking the books like Martha Stewart cooks a cake.
Well, as CEO of the company, it's your
turn
job...
Turn your radio down, Teresa.
My daughter turned it up.
Turn it down.
I did.
All right.
As CEO of the company,
so
it's your job to watch those books.
Huh? What'd you say?
You make me sick. Take that gun and put it in your mouth and do yourself a favor.
Oh, yeah, that's it. You want me to kill... Why don't all those 17,000 guys kill themselves? We're the guys that give them the jobs.
Now, we're the ones that work our ass off and sweat so that you can buy the 6-8 carat diamond ring for your wife.
Teresa, let me ask you something. Can you hear the phone?
We just got to walk across the street. You know what? Take the gun and do yourself a favor. Forget the picture. Do your wife a favor.
Listen to the phone that I'm on right now. Listen to that. That's the cheap, garbage Sports Illustrated phone that I got to use now because I'm on my rear end with nothing.
You're on a book tour. Oh, I'm so upset for you.
Yes,
I'm feeding three kids, okay? I don't have the 8-carat diamond ring. I work for a living.
But that's
don't
a good point.
Don't live off the sweat of other people.
Teresa's making a good point. You're on a book tour right now.
All right, so a publisher's paying my rent. They're not putting me up at the Ritz.
You're hurting so much. I am so much pity of you right now, I'll tell you. I'm just crying.
I want to ask you, and I think it's a fair question. If James Sidgemore, the CEO of WorldCom, they find him tomorrow Okay.
They're all wrong, just
Thanks,
like you
Sarah.
Were, okay? Thanks. You knew the pool house was costing something. You knew the diamond ring was costing something. You knew the portrait was costing something. You didn't think that was coming out of the mouths of the people that you should have been giving raises to and promotions and pats on the back. Don't even patronize me with your ignorance,
this,
all right?
Like
you are an ignorant man. That is why your company went over under. You are ignorant, all right? I have nothing more to say on this subject.
I can feel that way, but you don't understand how business is done.
Oh, honey, I've been managing restaurants and businesses all my life. Yes, I know how it's done. The greedy people
at the top,
the people on the bottom. So shut up and pull the trigger. Thank
you. I got a wife who won't let me. Listen to the phone I'm on, Mr. Henry, is what I'm saying, okay?
You're on a book tour, and you're on.
Listen to this. This is the garbage pit Time Life cell phone I got. Because I got nothing. And the reason why I got nothing is I trusted Jack Embry, who is the CFO of my company, who is a lying dog, and is doing time right now for what he did. And
did you or did you not know what was going on with the books at your company?
Okay, well, how do you want me to answer that?
With a simple yes or no would be nice.
It's more than that. Did I know? Do you know if God exists?
Mr. Green, I'm not going to have you patronize me. Did you know that...
Sir, I'm not trying to patronize you.
All right, did you know that the books were getting cooked at your company and that you'd have to put 3,500 guys on the street?
I don't think it's a fair question. I'm not going to dignify it with an answer.
That's not a question that calls in a... That's, what do you mean dignify it with an answer? I'm asking for the truth.
I knew... This guy was my brother-in-law, number one, okay? That's the big problem you get into. My wife's working a shellfish buffet, and the next thing I know, I'm bringing in this brother-in-law of hers that was a croupier in Atlantic City.
As your CFO?
Yes.
And this is supposed to be somebody else's problem.
Let me tell you something. If you've seen my wife, she is put together like you would... Can I just be honest with you?
I don't care how put together your wife is. You're hiring her brother-in-law... You see what I'm saying? The guy was a croupier in Atlantic City. Hold on. 1-800-449-8686. Make more bread being a croupier in Atlantic City than you do anything else. We're talking with Robert Green, a man whose company went belly up much the same way WorldCom went belly up. He had a hand in firing 3,500 guys. On Friday, 17,000 will be on the street, and he says, don't feel for the workers, feel for the poor CEOs who could kill themselves. He almost did. 1-800-449-8686.
And now more on the Phil Henry Show.
Mr. Green, I'm going to keep hitting this. The 17,000 guys.
Oh, here we go.
No, just listen. The 17,000 men and women that will be on the bricks on Friday because of this WorldCom debacle. The 3,500 employees that you yourself fired in the March of 1989 because somebody cooked the books. What about those people?
Let me tell you about the 17,000 that you want to bleed the crocodile tears for. These people go up, they get off the job at 5 o'clock, they go have a beer, they got another job. This is a small world that they live in. We're talking, these workers don't need the amount of money I need to maintain a lifestyle that at one time in 1991, I owned a Rolls Royce that had been owned by John Lennon. Now that is an investment, and I don't have that anymore. And you want me to start feeling bad about a guy who gets off the assembly line, goes across the street to some steak and brew, sits down with a couple of buddies and says, what's happening at Verizon? He's in a truck. He's up on a line on Monday morning. And a Rolls Royce that John Lennon owned, I had to dump in 1991 because of the brother-in-law, which I'm going to go number one on him. And, oh, I think about the things that I lost in my life. And you can hear the... Again, hear this crap phone that I'm on.
Why don't you get the publishing company that's got you on the World Book Tour or whatever?
Mr. Henry, it's a tour of the West Coast and the Southeast.
Well, get them to buy you a cell phone.
Yeah, sure. Okay, I'll give you the number of Reagan books. You call call Judith Reagan and have her get me a new cell phone.
1-800-449-8686. Maria, go ahead. Maria, go ahead.
From you is poor me, poor me, poor me. I have a crappy cell phone. I almost blew my brains out on a frickin' $8,000 de Gaulle painting had to turn in that poor little old Rolls Royce that John Lennon used to own. What about the 3,500 people you put on alert because you say you didn't know what was going on in
your
book?
Wait. Apparently you don't hear too good. I said that they can get off the line and go to work for Verizon come Monday morning. What do they care?
Did you ever hear Ivan Boesky?
What's up, ma'am?
Did you ever hear of Ivan Boesky?
Yeah, he was a real slime ball. He got thrown into prison in the 80s.
Yep.
Yeah, about the same.
I used to work for his CEO, his CFO, excuse me. I used to work for his CFO. Lost his job with Ivan Boesky. He's a wealthy man because he was honest. He admitted his mistakes. He started a new company, and he ran his life and employed a lot of people. Because he couldn't find a job, so you
can't
earn enough money to support your lifestyle.
Oh, I see.
You know what? I have a hard time.
Maria, yeah, I find it really coincidental that the one guy you worked for Ivan Boesky, just happened to be the honest one. Yeah, sure.
Oh, I didn't say he was honest when he did it. I say he knew what was going on in those books. And I say he was guilty.
How am I supposed to know?
An honest business after that. I'm saying you're guilty.
I'm guilty.
I'm saying that you knew what was going on in your books.
I knew what was going on. My wife's brother-in-law.
On you.
My wife's brother-in-law, who to this day I believe was mobbed up anyway, she brings him into my company. What am I supposed to do? Kick him out? This is a guy. He's got a neck. He's got a neck like a tree trunk. He hangs around with guys that are dealing ecstasy. And
you got this guy in your company? How could you hire a man like this?
He's stealing crack down here at one of these dance joints.
And he's the CFO?
Yes, sir.
Everybody has blamed. You've blamed everybody. You've blamed your wife because she wants too much. You blamed your kids because they need too much. You blamed this brother-in-law because you have no choice because he's family.
Maria, please watch your language, okay?
Yeah, see, this is what I'm talking about. These people, they come off the line at 5 o'clock and it's F this and F that, and you're an F in this. 17,000 people with nothing but F on their mouths is going to be out of a job. I almost blew my brains all over a painting that today could be worth in excess of $100,000.
Then perhaps maybe you should have blown your brains out.
Oh, really? And how much you think that the God be worth today with my brains all over it?
You know what? How important was that painting? Why did you have to spend that much money on a painting? You weren't spending all that money on things
exactly.
Like that. Perhaps you would have a business
to
work for.
Yeah, take that money and reinvest it in people. Reinvest it into equipment. Create more jobs with it.
Well, now listen to that. And she's screaming at me, and I got the Time Life phone. I got a phone that's shaped like a shoe.
At least you have a cell phone.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like you got a very good one either.
No,
all right.
I'm not.
All right, listen, Maria, thank you for your call. I think you made some very good points. 1-800...
I wanted to interrupt you.
Hold on. 1-800-449-8686. 1-800-449-8686. Robert Green, who was involved in much the same scandal that WorldCom is involved in now...
Yeah, this is what I want to say, Mr. Henry.
Go ahead.
What part of the show, when does it happen that you start getting my back a little bit?
I'm sorry?
At what point in the show do you start catching my back? And stop with your, yeah, that was a really nice comment, Maria. Good going, Charlie. When do you stop doing that?
I don't stop. Mr. Green, you understand something. I am here.
You're here to get the truth.
Yeah.
Well, then when do you start catching my back? Now, you've heard about the...
You've mentioned a Rolls Royce that belonged to John Lennon.
I owned that at one time. Then this Guido, that is the brother-in-law and my wife's brother, this guy cooks up the books. They bust me out.
1-800-449-8686. Perry, go ahead. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hey, you know what, bud? You are a moron. You need to take a seat back behind that desk.
You
need to take a seat back behind that desk and that gun and think about it a little bit longer.
You ever been a CEO of a company, sir?
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact.
I doubt it.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? There shows your amount of intelligence.
Well, what was your line of work?
I'll tell you what.
What was your line of work?
If it would have been ran correctly in the first place, the idiot wouldn't have had to cook the books to show a profit. And obviously, you don't know enough about management nor taking care of people to run a company so they will work for you and produce.
How come nobody ever blames the workers?
Cook the books because you don't know how to run a company.
You got all the answers. How come you're not a CEO anymore?
Because I choose to do what I like, not what I have to make money.
Let me ask you something. How come nobody ever blames the workers?
How come nobody ever blames the workers?
Right.
Because the workers do what they're told to do under the management style. You have no style.
Well, you know what? I don't think you were ever a CEO either. And if you were,
you know what?
It explains why
think,
Toys R Us is no longer
if you could. If you could think longer than you could hold your weenie, then you obviously wouldn't be out of business right now, would you?
And you'd know about holding weenies how?
Because I've got...
Listen, yeah, go ahead and laugh while I got the crap phone.
Can you hang that up or something?
Hold on for a minute. I'm walking closer to the base.
Yeah, that's good. Congratulations, Mr. Green, on your book tour. The book is called... I had the name here.
You can't take it with your tales from the other side of corporate America.
Right. You can't take it with your tales from the other side of corporate America. And you talk about how you lost your job. And do you have any money now? Have you made a comeback?
No, I have not. I haven't made any kind of a comeback. And by the way, I haven't sold one book. So thank you for that, too.
It's not my fault, sir.
Yeah.
1-800-449-8686. Well, there you go. Just one view of what's going on in America right now. And that was Robert Green, who said that he sat there after he found out that the books had been cooked in his company and almost blew his brains out. He almost shot himself all over an $8,000 painting. And he's glad he didn't, because how much would it be worth now with his brains on it? 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show. Speaking of the stock market, Vernon Dozier was on our program yesterday to say that Martha Stewart and all of her stuff has just turned his home into a gay playpen. Here it
is. Phil Henry Show.
Comedy gold.
What all this baby bull crying about, I'm so insecure in my manhood, it's draining my manhood. I mean, if Martha Stewart drains your manhood, you have no manhood to drain.
All right, hold on. I listen to you, Johnny, and I appreciate what you're saying. But you got to understand what it's like. I don't know how long your wife's been watching Martha Stewart. But
for about 10 years.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a question. Has your wife ever floated a candle in a punch bowl?
Yes, she has.
Oh,
and
come
we made passionate love after that.
No, bullcrap. I can't find
it. You are full of crap.
How do you
feel? You need to cut your mother's apron strings and grow up.
You're telling me that your wife floated candles in a punch bowl and you made passionate love after that?
I sure did. Probably conceived my son. I mean, my God, man, come on.
I was watching a
you were probably watching some... I think
no,
you're
no,
gay.
Listen to this. I'm not gay.
I think you are.
Yeah, why? Hey,
because,
I was watching a Savannah porn
movie.
Because
you are intimidated by Martha Stewart.
I'm not intimidated by Martha Stewart. I'm intimidated by that woman
you hurt.
Let me ask you a question. I'm watching a Savannah porn movie, and you know who Savannah is.
Yeah, I
and
know who Savannah
as
is.
As soon as I smelled my wife's gingerbread cookies, the chubby goes away like a squirrel down a hole. Now, how do you figure that?
How do you figure what?
I think you're gay. I think you're gay.
My wife is
you
trying to...
You need to be watching Don Holmes is what you need
hey,
to
Hey, let me
watching.
Tell you something. Hey, pal, Martha Stewart's trying to make me gay, and she's trying to do the same thing to you. And
no,
if you
she's
had a...
not.
No,
okay,
she's not.
Thing is
you're
this.
Telling me that you got candles floating in a punch bowl, and you're not, and you don't see that as being gay?
Hell no, my wife put them in there. It helps her get into the mood, not me. My wife puts me in the mood, so if she is passionate, then I am passionate. You, I don't know what your damn hang-up is. I mean, you got some mental issues, but you're hung up in denial.
I'm not in denial. Look, I don't like guys,
yes,
okay?
Yes, you are. No, you are in denial. I'll tell you what. I think I know why you're a football coach, and your players need to be worried.
So look at you taking it personally now. You're taking it personally, aren't you, Johnny? because
I'm not taking it personal. Yeah, I think you are wasting everybody's time by calling the show and whining like some baby.
I think you're right, Johnny.
Oh, I think you're right, Johnny. So the host is now agreeing with...
Look, I put your call on the air, okay?
The host is a man.
You are
a mouse.
You know something? When your wife starts saving snowballs so that she can create ice sculptures, you give me a call and tell me if you're able to...
I don't have to worry about that. I live in the South where men are men. I have no idea where you're from.
Excuse me, and I don't mean any offense by
this,
but I saw a movie called Deliverance, and I don't think...
Exactly.
Yeah,
it was
thank
filmed
you.
In Tennessee
well,
on
that's
the Atlantic River.
That's down south as far as I know.
Actually,
and,
it's not. It's in Tennessee.
Oh, that
south
ain't the South?
No, not as far as I'm concerned. South is Louisiana, Texas, you know, Georgia. How about them Georgia people?
And there's no guy smoking pool down there. Give me a break.
Where are
okay,
you from?
Look at,
I come from California. I come from California. And I'm going
to
tell you this. Every shoebox and empty tin can has been decked. Look, you call me gay one more time, and I'll get my truck warmed up. And I'm on my way down to whatever garbage pit you live in, down there in Cracker Barrel.
Now you're taking it personally, exactly. Right,
you're taking it personally.
Okay, but this guy, how can you say men will be men when even the possums are afraid when your boys walk up, okay?
See, there you go with more of the stereotypes. You're showing your true educational value right
I'll
there.
Be gay, and I will slap you into submission.
All right.
I'm going to tell you, that doesn't even want a reply. You are simply a loser.
Phil Hendry Show.
Comedy Gold.
All right, so that's the flashback from yesterday. It was Vernon. This is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686, where I do some of the voices of the different characters that come on here. Like, that was me doing Vernon, and that was me doing the voice there of Bob Green, the CEO of Nexus Industrial. Did that company exist? What difference does it make? WorldCom exists, that's all we need to know. And this is the new American capitalist. This is a guy who is intent on making enough money so he keeps the Rolls Royce in the garage or whatever fat cat car these guys are driving. You know, we live in a country now where everybody essentially is either wealthy or on their way to being wealthy, you know, or is really poor. I mean, that's where it is today. Or maybe I got a skewed version of how life really is. But, man, everybody's got a... You remember when it was special to own a BMW and now everyone drives a BMW? Well, a Mercedes, forget it. Now Mercedes makes a car. They make like a $15,000 Mercedes. And the same thing with Jaguar. And Rolls-Royce is going to start coming out with a subcompact and Cadillac. And it's because everybody either wants to be wealthy or they want to have the appearance of wealth. And it turns into a race. It turns into who can stack more chips on the table. So when, you know, you hear Bob Green say, I had all this pressure to get ahead in terms of my things, the material things that I had, I bet you it's not far from the truth. Why else do people do illegal things with money? They got to have more. And why do they got to have more money? They got to have more things. And why do they got to have more things? Because the guy across the street got a better thing than he did. So now he's got to have a better thing. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've seen people be depressed over the fact they got an S600 series sedan and a guy over here's got a Silver Star. What do they call a Rolls Royce? Silver Cloud. A Silver Spur? Silver Thing? Yeah, it's silver. They got a Silver Thing. And people get upset because their house is only 5,000 square feet and Charlie just put in an addition so he's got 7,000 square feet. And one guy's pool is bigger than another guy's pool. People have pool envy, house envy, pool table envy, wife envy. This is a society, ladies and gentlemen. This is a country, ladies and gentlemen. It's bereft of spirituality. It's all about things. I don't mind. I don't mind. You can make any money you want. You can do anything you want. But when you put 17,000 people out on the bricks, that's a little rough. That's just a little rough. And I read this press release from WorldCom. I want to assure our customers and employees that the company remains viable and committed to a long-term future. 17,000 people. How big is this company? Maybe, I don't know, maybe 17,000 is a drop in the bucket in terms of how many people they employ. But it seems like a hell of a lot of people. And of course, what he really wants to say is, I want to assure our stockholders that they can be rest assured that someday, long time from now, many years from now, when I'm dead, maybe the stock will come back on this thing, but not in my lifetime. Who's this guy kidding? This guy says, I want to assure that our customers and employees, the company remains viable. They got the SEC breathing down their neck. They got everybody with a, they're going to have a forensic audit up their rear end like they've never seen before in their lives. People are going to jail. They're subpoenaing records. There's 17,000 guys in a brick. And here comes Charlie with, and I'd like to assure the customers and employees that the company remains viable. You know what you're going to get? You're going to get something that sounds like this. Here you go. Where's the dial tone? Well, you know what it sounds. You know what a dial tone sounds like. I was trying to use a real one, but apparently the equipment that we have here doesn't facilitate that. 1-800-449-8686. So it's all about that bread, baby. You got to get that money. Get it, earn it, steal it, rob it, but get it, all right? Just have it in your pocket. Just, you know, so you can spend it in any direction that you can. With money, who needs God? That's the new marching orders of the Phil Hendry Show. When you've got plenty of... There. That's what you're going to be hearing, all of you world com clowns out there. If you got bread, you don't need Jesus, huh? 1-800-449-8686. Speaking of bread, buy my new Jay Santos t-shirt.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
As promised, we have R.C. Collins from Fair Play for American Youth on the line. In Great Britain, in France, in Spain, the legal drinking age, R.C., I understand, is 16. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes, sir.
Now, the legal drinking age in, I think it's Germany, is 16 for beer and wine, 18 for spirits. And then, of course, we have in Canada, it is 19 for much of the country, 18 in Alberta and Manitoba. Only in the United States, it would seem, in the developed so-called Western nations, is the drinking age 21.
Well, teenage drinking in America is considered to be suspicious, but teenage drinking, Phil, is also on the rise in America due to what we consider to be the inordinate amount of pressures on the teens.
In America.
In the United States, yeah.
Inordinate amounts of pressures because just the generationally things are getting tougher?
I think things are more difficult for kids today. We have to study harder. Our grades got to be gooder or better, I mean, than most. And generally, overall, it's more tough. But right now, in America... You can't even get a drink if you're a teen, and yet you're allowed to drive a car.
Part of your platform that I was looking at here is you're asked to drive your parents, you're asked to go on errands.
Yeah, you're asked to drive your kid, brother, and sister around. You've got to go on errands, and yet we are not even allowed the common decency to share a highball with adults. And so we're embarrassed, for instance, when a grandparent or a family friend comes over, and they want to raise a glass, and they say, well... You can have a Shirley Temple or a root beer. No. We feel that every teenager in America should be aware of the lower drinking ages in the Western countries, like you were saying, of the Western countries of...
The developing countries of the West.
Developing countries of the West, yes.
R.C. Collins is joining us. You're proposing, and I know that your program, Fair Play for American Youth, proposes a three steps toward lowering the drinking age to 16.
Phil, the drinking age in America...
Let me just finish, though. The drinking age in America, teenage drinking's on the rise. Drunk driving among teens is on the rise. Automobile accidents, okay, among teenagers...
Well, it's no different than anybody else. I mean, drinking in America's on the rise. Adults get into automobile accidents. Adults have alcohol abuse problems. We're not saying that you cure the problem by keeping drinks away from teenagers. You've got to cure the problem by making sure alcoholism is treated. Everybody gets to be treated for it, not just adults.
So it's not a generational problem, in other words?
Yeah, it's not a generational problem. Everybody drinks too much. You can't say, well, don't let the kids drink because they drink too much on account of the adults do too. I have the example of my own mother, as tragic as it is, who is a problem drinker and has been for much of my life. Does that mean I don't get to have one? No, no, no. We propose that...
Can I just mention something?
I'm sorry?
Let me just mention that drinking, alcoholism especially, is hereditary. You say your mother has a drinking problem, right?
That is correct.
So why would you want to drink?
Because I have the right... You can't say I have a drinking problem until I drink. You can't say that.
So, in other words, you want the right to drink, and then we'll find out whether you have a drinking problem or not.
Well, my mom got that chance, and that...
What about your father?
My father hasn't lived with us for several years. I don't know his whereabouts.
Your life is... You are here talking about drinking...
Well, my life doesn't have anything to do with this. You asked about my mother.
Okay. You've got a three-point program. And if you want, I'll give our phone number out, and then you can illuminate what those points are.
Certainly.
Okay, our number is 1-800-449-8686. R.C. Collins with Fair Play for American Youth. He's a high school junior who believes the drinking age should be lowered to 16 in America. And as we pointed out at the beginning of the program, the drinking age in Great Britain is 16 to purchase beer or cider with a meal, 16 in France, 16 in Spain, 16 for... Germany, it's much lower. There's no doubt about that. Why is it 21 in America?
Well, I believe it's 21 in our country for the simple fact that the adults in this country look at the youth culture of today and have some very real jealousy on account of the fact that the youth culture today is way better than the youth culture, with all due respect, Mr. Henry, for instance, of you and your youth culture. We got hip-hop, we got raves, we got rap, we have more expendable income than ever before, our education's better. I think there's a lot of adults, if you'll pardon my phrase, that got a hard-on for the kids today.
Okay, well, we don't need to go there, but you're saying that it's a jealousy thing?
I think it's a...
What about the obvious fact that maybe they want to protect kids?
I don't think you can. I think that's scurrilous, and I think that's phony. It's 16, and protect us from what? It's 16 in Spain. I don't see any kids driving off, just crashing into a river there or anything.
All right, so the drinking age in America should be lowered in accordance with European standards to the age of 16, or barring that, the commonly decent age of 18, you say?
That is correct.
Point two, the elimination of the control of movement for the teen of today.
Yes, and that includes curfews, restrictive bedtimes, entry to movies and to strip clubs or strip joints, either total nude or partial nude. We're simply saying we want the option of entering, if you'll pardon the pun, of entering these clubs. And finally, and perhaps the most controversial, we do believe that parents and community leaders should be held to a standard of reparation. And by reparation, what we mean is we believe an apology to the youth of today.
For what? An apology for what? For not killing you with booze? I mean, an apology for what?
An apology for the embarrassment that we suffer every time an adult says, let's have a drink. Oh, yeah. Do you guys want a Shirley Temple or a root beer? No, no, no. We will not abide that.
I just got done going on vacation with our kids, who are not 16. One's 13, one's 15. They had no problem with a Shirley Temple or a root beer.
I believe you said you went on the Disney cruise. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Well, no kid's going to be embarrassed drinking a root beer there. But I'm talking about at Thanksgiving when your grandparents come over and, like, your parent will say, okay, let's raise a glass, and you got to have a Roy Rogers. I think it's wrong, and we think it's wrong.
All right, R.C., you're doing fine. I know you're nervous. You mentioned to my producer that you're nervous.
Thank you.
1-800-449-8686. This is a radical departure socially for this country if you're asking for the drinking age to be lowered to 16. You're asking for...
Well, Mr. Henry, I can tell you...
You're asking for a change in the way a society views itself.
I can tell you, Mr. Henry, right now in America there's approximately 40 million teens And that number will grow over the next decade. We don't see some loosening up on this whole drinking and party aspect, then we may begin to purposely let our grades and test scores slip. The quality of the professional in America will decline, and as you baby boomers get older, our generation will be too stupid to take care of your asses, and we're asking for the common decency to have it.
Wait, so you're saying, in other words, you'll be that your scores, your grades, and professionalism is so bad, I won't have anybody wiping up after me in the old folks' home?
Look, on New Year's, we get sparkling apple juice. That kind of humiliation, that kind of slap in the face, and ultimately, that kind of slap in the face...
Is a slap in the face.
Is bad. And the sooner I start taking pops, the more of a tolerance I'll build up, too. That's another thing. If we can have a pop now, then we won't be, then...
What about alcoholism? What about getting somebody started early on the drinking so that they become an alcoholic?
Look, it's sooner rather than later, and if somebody's going to become an alcoholic, you might as well find out now so you can put them into the place where they put people with that problem, draw out the blood, take a look at it. If it's 100-proof straight Applejack, you might as well know about it now.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. R.C. Collins... The group is called Fair Play for American Youth. Let's lower the drinking age to 16 and be in line with the rest of the country. Here is Whitney on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hi.
Be in line, I should say, with the rest of the world. Go ahead, Whitney.
Hi. I'm 16 years old. I'm a teenager, and I disagree that teenagers should be drinking. I think it is wrong. It's like teenagers are not very responsible.
Why do they let them? The drinking age right now, Whitney, in Spain is 16.
But we're not talking about Spain. This is America.
What's different about America that we can't hold our liquor?
Who cares if we can hold our liquor? Obviously, if we can't hold our liquor, why should we put people that can't hold their liquor
automobiles
killing people?
But Whitney, what you're saying is that unlike, for instance, a young woman in Spain, somebody gives you a drink and your dress is up over your head. Is that what you're saying?
No, she's not. She's not saying that.
I've never been drunk in my entire life. No. I take care of my friends that drink because they are so irresponsible.
But
they are going to kill someone if they get on the road.
Is there such a thing as responsible drink? And I like that metaphor, your dress is up over your head. I mean...
Well, there's a 16-year-old girl in Spain right now that obviously can hold a drink. Whitney is afraid if she takes a drink, her skirt's up over her head.
She didn't say that.
That's going to happen.
Huh?
I don't think that's going to happen because I don't drink. I'm not scared. I'm scared that if I get drunk, I will be irresponsible. I will get in a car and I will kill someone or myself.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because people here kids are irresponsible. Adults don't normally drink and drive as much as kids.
Kids are not
allowed to drink.
Are kids more irresponsible?
They get in their car and they kill people.
They let us drive a car. That takes responsibility.
Yeah, but do you know what alcohol does to a person?
Well, what about over in Russia? They can drink over there and they can
drive. We're talking about Russia. Who cares? We're talking about America. That
I think there's a question we ought to answer. Is there something fundamentally different about a kid from Spain and a kid from America?
I maintain, Mr. Henry, the American kid's better than a Spain kid. But Whitney, she's afraid if she has a pop, she'll wind up with her skirt.
Yeah, up over her head. I got that.
Well...
That has nothing to do with it. We're not talking about kids in Spain. This is kids in America. What they do does not affect us.
Do you drive?
What?
Do you drive a car?
Yeah, actually.
Okay. That's really a responsible thing to drive a car, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Then why can't you sit down comfortably and have a highball at the end of a hard day?
Because a teenager, I can't call my parents and be like, hey, I'm drunk off my ass. Will you come pick me up?
What if you're drinking at your house, Whitney?
Yeah, what if you're...
That's wrong.
Well,
I'm 16 years old. Someone at my age should be out having fun with their friends and not drinking.
Well, I know,
so,
R.C.
People that sit there and get drunk.
R.C., I want to ask you, what about if a young person is drinking at home with their parents?
That's ridiculous.
Parents shouldn't let them drink if they're that age.
You should be able to go out and drink.
You have to earn the responsibility.
Also, I believe that a 16-year-old ought to be able to go down to a bar or any partially nude strip place and have a drink.
Partially nude. All right. Whitney, thank you for your call. 1-800-449-8686. So he don't even want to drink at home with his parents. He wants to go down to any club where there's partial or full nudity and have a drink. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry with R.C. Collins. He wants the drinking age lowered to 16 in America. It's the Phil Henry Show.
And now, Phil Hendry.
I don't think it's too much to ask that the American female, to the teenage females, learn a little bit of control. Otherwise, we will simply not get the drinking age lowered.
You're talking about American teenage girls.
That's correct.
Well, it seems a little bit of a stretch to say that there is no legalized teenage drinking in America because American teenage girls can't control themselves.
Well, you heard the last young lady. The reason why she doesn't want the drinking age lowered is because she realizes she can't control her drinking. What I'm trying to say to all American teenagers is, especially the females, get some kind of decent control over yourself so that when you do have a drink, you know...
Well, you said to her, you're going to wind up with your dress up over your head or a lampshade on your head, etc., etc. So in other words, if you give a drink to a teenage female...
She can't handle it. That's why what we're asking to do is to introduce it in stages.
All right, Phil Henry Show here with R.C. Collins, who wants the drinking age in America lowered to 16, but only for boys.
Starting only with boys, yeah.
Why?
Because you heard her. Most teenage girls in America, you give them one pop. I mean, there's a good and a bad to it. You know, the good side is, okay, yeah. Maybe she'll nude up.
Okay, and what's the bad side?
Well, teenage pregnancy and that kind of...
So why should we only let you guys drink?
Because I believe that men, you know, can have a cocktail, smoke a cigar, and be responsible. Watch the game and go, oh, okay, Bob, see you tomorrow at the office, and go in the car and drive home.
All right, there are laws against drinking and driving in this country.
Yeah.
So you can't have a drink and get in the car and drive home. There are laws against reckless driving and all of those things. So you're not counseling getting in the car and driving.
Well, I want to do whatever the adults can do.
Well, adults are not allowed to legally drink and drive in America.
Okay, well, whatever they can do, I want to do.
Well, it seems sexist to me to say that only teenage boys, 16, ought to be allowed to drink. When should the legal drinking age be for girls?
Probably keep it 21 until we can be assured that we're not going to have a coochie festival going on.
Okay, look, a lot of this stuff is getting into an area that I'm uncomfortable with.
Huh?
A lot of this is getting into areas that I'm uncomfortable with. You're saying that if teenage women in America are allowed to drink at the age of 16, then there's going to be hell to pay.
I'm just saying, lower the drinking age for boys first, then introduce the women slowly to it. I can tell you, Mr. Hendry, I've seen my mom and her friends. They get a little stupid when they have champagne or wine.
Well, I've seen a lot of men act pretty stupid, too, after a few beers. I mean, I don't exactly where you're drawing the line here, but...
I think that men are a little bit more able to deal with it. You're not going to have some guy throwing his... When's the last time you've seen a guy have a drink and take his pants off?
Look,
I was at a party and some bush pig got wasted and tried to take advantage of me, and it was gross. And you can't have it.
Look, kid, going to a party where there's a lot of underage drinking, where the parents aren't there, and obviously the booze is flowing, it's you're right, it's no different. Adults act the same way, all right? It's just that there's not going to be, you said it yourself. If girls are not allowed to drink because you're afraid that they're going to throw their dresses up over their heads, who's going to keep them from having a drink at a party where there's no adults there?
I believe that's where the guys come in. You don't allow her to have a drink unless she's, you know, she's nice and...
Yeah, see, this is what I mean, man. You got no game plan here. And what is this crap about how you guys are going to let your grade slip?
This is not crap.
This is not crap. You're saying that if you do not get underage drinking... And
I wish you wouldn't call it underage drinking. I wish you'd call it what it is.
Okay, drinking at 16.
Drinking at 16.
You guys don't get 16-year-old drinking. You're going to let your grades slip. You are going to get bad grades, so none of you will have jobs. What, is it going to be a generation of bums?
A generation of bums that will eventually be able to pull up, but not before you guys go into an old folks' home and you're peeing on the floor, and there's nobody that'll, you know, take care of it.
Yeah, that's really going to happen.
Well, I'll tell you something, Mr. Henry. Go ahead and call my bluff. Don't let us have drinking. Our grades will go down.
And then nobody will be there to change my bedpan.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Well, I don't care. I'll be dead soon anyway. Meanwhile, you guys will be out on the street doing whatever you're doing. Drink. I guess you can drink your Ripple wine then.
So you're saying you don't care if the crap in the bedpan flows over?
I don't care. I don't need you guys in the old folks' home nursing me back to health. As far as I'm concerned, if you guys, sell your generation down the river because you wanted to have a drink and we wouldn't lower the age to 16, then it's going to be a whole bunch of dumbasses sitting on a street corner drinking fortified wine.
But at least we'll be able to drink.
Great. At least you'll be able to drink. Oh, we're up against our break time again. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. R.C. Collins with Fair Play for American Youth. He says there are 50,000 members of this organization ready to let their grades tank so that there won't be anybody qualified to take care of us in an old folks' home if we don't lower the drinking age to 16, a drinking age that they have in Spain and France, among other places. Phil Henry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
The Phil Henry Show is back.
I want to just say to all the teenagers in America, are you aware that the kids in Europe get to drink at 16 and you don't? How long are we going to bend over, spread, and take something like the size of a baseball bat? I'm like the Jesse Jackson from the teens of today. I have a dream.
Well, your dreams, man, are maybe misguided in that you want to lower the drinking age, okay? And that comment that only teenage boys ought to be allowed to drink until teenage girls can be monitored and not throw their dresses up over their head is sexist.
Well, I don't agree.
Well, okay, if you don't agree, you don't have to agree, but it is. Here is John on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
Hey, let me tell you something. This kid has no clue. I'm 35 years old. Former alcoholic.
Do you drink?
Hey, kid, shut up.
Do you drink?
Hey, kid, shut up.
Okay, hey, John, are you in AA?
Yes.
Yeah, you know that people in AA don't call themselves former alcoholics.
Okay.
So you're really
not. Hold on.
You're really not in AA, are you?
I am in AA.
Really? Then why do you call yourself a former alcoholic?
Yeah, why do you call yourself?
Shut up, kid.
Yeah,
why do you call yourself?
Shut the hell up, you moron!
Why do you call yourself
the
a former?
The only baseball bat that kid.
Why do you call yourself?
Damn head.
Hey, John.
Now let me tell you.
John, before I hang up on you, why do you call yourself a former?
No, you're not going to hang up on me, okay?
See ya. Here is the lady in Houston is gone. Okay, great. It's out of control. 1-800-449-8686. Get the kid back up here. Okay, first of all, people in AA don't call themselves former alcoholics.
What?
People in AA don't call themselves former alcoholics. Do you know what alcoholism is?
It's people that can't hold a drink.
People that can't hold a drink, okay.
Yeah, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about that people know how to take a drink.
Well, that guy was 35 years old, claimed to be an alcoholic. I don't know what he was. Maybe he still drinks, all right? But 35 is a hell of an age to suddenly discover that you got some kind of a drinking problem.
But I don't have a drinking problem. I'm talking about... If that guy's a lightweight, that's his problem. I know how to take a drink. I drink malt liquor. I drink fortified wine. One time I had cooking sherry.
Cooking sherry?
Yeah. How many adults know how to do that?
Cooking sherry? That's like alcoholism, man. Do you drink mouthwash, too?
No, I'm just saying I can hold. I'm not sloppy with a drink.
1-800-449-8686. Dennis on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
How you doing?
Yes, sir.
It's pretty obvious if this person is indicative of the teenagers, they're obviously not mature enough to be able to handle alcohol.
Why?
Why? Listen to what you're saying. You're not making any sense.
I'm saying that in Europe they get to drink when they're 16.
You know, in Europe, when they're 16, they're a heck of a lot more mature than what you sound.
Well, it looks like American teenagers then are, you say we're stupid?
No, I said you're not mature.
How come?
Listen to what you're saying.
What's wrong with American teenagers? You don't think we're as good as the ones that they have in Europe?
I said you're not as mature because you're raised differently.
Okay, so there's something wrong with the way we raise kids in America, is that it?
You better believe
it. I have a dream that someday...
Well, you know, I'm going to interrupt. There's nobody that's called tonight has been able to refute why it shouldn't be 16 years of age, including you, Dennis. You're even... What do you mean kids in America are not as mature? What is that supposed to mean? In Spain, in other words, they're more mature. In England, they're more mature. Like when they have soccer riots and they have like soccer riots in France. And
I have a dream.
Oh, will you shut up?
That someday adults and kids can sit down at Thanksgiving dinner and share a glass of NyQuil.
NyQuil.
Yeah. And this guy, whatever his name is, and everybody else out there doesn't get it.
All right. The kid makes a point, but then again, he makes no point. 1-800-449-8668. So here's the thing.
Nobody's been able to argue against me.
Oh, man, will you be... What do you mean, sit down and have a glass of NyQuil?
Or a gentleman Jack with a water back?
The point that you're making is a good one, okay? How come kids are in Europe are more mature? Well, I don't necessarily agree that they are.
The adults in Europe are more mature. That's what we're talking about. On account of they let the kids have a NyQuil with a water back.
They ain't drinking NyQuil.
They can drink what they want.
What do you mean a NyQuil with a water back? They're not drinking NyQuil over there. They're having wine or whatever they drink. Brandon, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Yes, sir.
Well, I mean, if he could calm down and talk without screaming at the top of his little lungs.
Well, nobody's making any sense.
Hey, listen, I agree with what you're saying to an extent,
there
but you,
you
also
go.
Have...
Finally!
You know, listen, you obviously have to take into account of something, too. I am an alcoholic. And when I was younger,
are you
I
still drinking?
No, I'm not drinking anymore. But...
How come?
At that age, when you're that age...
Because he's an alcoholic.
Right. At that age, you don't realize, you think, hey, man, you know, you're just tying one on at a party, and then you do it every weekend, then you do it every day, and by the time you realize you have a problem, your body's shot.
But, Brandon, there's a flaw in your reasoning, and here it is. You can't
drink. I mean, I'm not addicted to anything else.
You can't drink, and so you don't want me to have a couple of laughs.
No. I think everybody, I think drinking's for everybody.
Do you know that those Frenchie teens, they drink red wine and snails?
And what?
And snails?
You mean escargot?
Escargot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Think about
well,
that.
No. See, that's
think
what I'm saying.
That.
I can go to a party and I don't have a problem with people drinking. I think there's nothing wrong with people drinking. What I have a problem with is people don't realize what it does to them till it's too late and they have a problem. And then who's going to take care of all your 500,000 youth when they're trash?
You know something? You must be an alcoholic, because I didn't understand a word of that.
Well, look at the guy...
Yeah, go ahead. Explain it, Phil.
Well, what were you saying, Brandon?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
No, I mean, he's making a...
See that day? That's saying nothing. Hey, Brandon, well, you know you can get a good hallucination going on Romalar.
Okay.
Well, that's not a way to get your point across. That obviously shows how immature you are.
You just wish you had a shot of Jägermeister once again until you fall down. You miss the fun of it.
Quit being rude to a guy who may have a life problem.
Life
well,
problem.
It doesn't matter. I don't, but I'm
who's
just saying.
A life problem?
I think people should be able to drink.
All right, great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, look at this. You hate it because there's no adults that are making no sense.
All right, well, maybe it's a difficult thing to argue against the logic of 16 years old drinking, but you are coming off sounding pretty stupid. And it,
you know, sticks and stones can break my bones, but the word's not going to hurt me. That guy's life problem isn't booze. That guy's life problem is he can't have any booze. And if he could drink some, maybe he'd pull the cob out of his butt and re-wedge it. Because I think he's got something wedged deep and wide. Up, left.
You know, you sound so hostile that I think if you did have a drink, you would drive irresponsibly. Melody, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
That's unfair, Mr. Hendry.
I would just like to say to him, he has no clue what he's talking about. 16-year-olds should not be able to drink. I should know. I am a 16-year-old. I mean, we are so...
You're a female, and I agree. I do not believe female, teenage females, should be allowed alcohol.
Well, I think you're a sexist bastard, so I mean...
Well, I mean, look, Melanie, you can call me names, but the fact is, men have a higher tolerance for taking a pop.
Do you realize how stupid you sound?
Why? Why do I sound stupid? Think about it. You have a drink, what happens? Skirt up, goes up over the head, back car, of the seat of the car.
Are you drinking now?
Huh?
Have you been drinking now? Back car of the seat of the car.
Pregnancy?
I have had a couple of drinks, and you know what? I'm still a virgin. I'm not knocked up. I haven't done anything stupid.
You had a couple of drinks before you got on the phone?
No, when she... Where, Melody?
I have had drinks in the past, but...
Melody, all I'm saying is, as a young... I'm 16. I'm a junior at Chatsworth High in California. I think I ought to be allowed to have a drink, but if you have one, next thing you know, you're having my kid.
You know,
what
the
a
worst
rude...
problem about that is the females are normally more responsible when it comes to those kind of things. That's why there's date rape, because guys get so pissed drunk that they can't handle themselves, and they end up forcing a woman in the back of the car. Trust me.
I think the woman forces herself into the back of the car.
There are a lot of
what
women
are
more irresponsible, and I see your point. I don't think anybody who is 16 should be able to drink. We should make the drinking age 18, because if you're old enough to get drafted, if there's a war, you should be able to, you know, knock back a couple beers.
There you go. There you go.
But 16 is... We still live with our parents, for crying out loud.
Well, what better place to have a couple of pops of Grey Goose than with your parents? I'm not talking about running around out there in the under the twilight with the moon lit full, you and me and a bottle of... A Gentleman Jack, the more drunker chicks get, the higher the skirt goes, and I don't agree with that.
Will you knock it off with that, man? Everything with you has to do with women, and they shouldn't be allowed to drink. How old do you think a woman should be before she's allowed to drink?
Probably about 30 or 31.
31?
Yeah. Well past childbearing years.
What are you talking about? There are women in their 40s. You make no sense. You make
no
sense what...
It's just a bunch of losers that can't get laid. It's got nothing to do with...
Okay, now you're getting into an area that's going to really make me angry, so shut up.
Oh, trying to tell me what to do, huh?
Are you drunk?
What?
Are you drunk?
Do I sound it?
Yeah.
I do.
Very.
Yes, you
sound
bummed.
Plastered.
I sound what?
Plastered.
No, ma'am. I had a little pop of Grey Goose on the counter before I come on the air. That's all.
You're a drunk 16, a drunk 16-year-old putz. That's what you are.
How dare you?
You're a schmuck.
Ladies should be able to drink when they're no longer attractive to men.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah?
No, the kid.
Oh.
You're just like the man who want to keep kids down.
Hey, kid, where's the phone?
In my hand.
No, it isn't.
Oh, it's on the floor.
It's up your ass.
+1 800 449 8686 Phil Henry Show.
+1 800 449 8686 And now more on The Phil Hendry Show.
See, it's interesting when you screen this show, and that's how good we are at screening phone calls, because the nature of The Phil Hendry Show is such, as we've said many times, those of you who may be new to the show, let me just warn you, we are big enemies of talk radio, huge enemies of talk radio. We would like nothing better than to undermine the entire structure of talk radio and show it for the worthless a pile of balderdash that it really is. But when you're screening a show like ours, it was very interesting, that call that came in from the guy who said, I used to be an alcoholic, and he was in AA. How did we know that was a phony baloney call? Because nobody in AA says they used to be an alcoholic. So that guy got about 30 seconds of our time, got blown right off the line. That's, see, you just, you know, we're smart. As Fredo would say in The Godfather, I'm not dumb, I'm smart. And I say that because it was on AMC this past weekend. The 4th of July was celebrated in America on American Movie Classic by showing Godfathers Part 1 and 2. Tremendous American trilogy. That and Born on the 4th of July. It's like all these patriotic movies just get more depressing. It's just more and more depressing every 4th of July. Now, to celebrate America's birthday, Ed Gein, psycho killer from Wisconsin. Every state in the union be represented by one serial murderer. Today, from California, Richard Ramirez. Then tomorrow in Wisconsin, Ed Gein. Then we go down to Florida, Ted Bundy. New York, I don't know, somebody. Chicago, Al Capone, somebody. Jimmy the Weasel. It's time now for when did it start to suck? Yes, when did these things start to suck? There's a certain point, I don't know what you want to call it, there is a trigger point, there's an apex that is reached by all phenomena, cultural and otherwise, and then after that it just begins to blow dead. Just dead, like chimps or something. Just dead chimps, I think is a fairly decent description. Led Zeppelin. When did Led Zeppelin really start to suck? You guessed it, right after the release of their first album. That first album was great. Everything else from there. Now, I know a lot of people disagree. Well, Physical Graffiti. No, the first album was the only good one they did. The rest of it blew. Especially when Jimmy Page put on his little pants with the big stars and get out of here. The Rolling Stones, of course, started to suck right after Beggar's Banquet. That's when they bought their jet. When they bought that jet, goodbye. Fast food. When did it start to suck? The minute Jack in the Box introduced the pita pocket. Oh. Okay. When did cars start to suck? You got it when that first rice burner from Japan rolled off the ship. And ditto for motorcycles. Sitting in first class used to be cool. When did that start sucking? Well, sitting in first class started to suck right after they bumped up the first guy with enough frequent flyer miles to sit there. That's right, the big bump up. Eating a steak started to suck the minute the first animal rights activist had to go and show us how cows were slaughtered. Remember that? Don't you know how they... Did I have to know that? You got to show me that? The Hollywood Walk of Fame out here on Hollywood Boulevard started to suck when they gave Rin Tin Tin a star, as far as I'm concerned. That's the end of that, man. When they gave Rin Tin Tin his own star on the Walk of Fame, fireworks shows were great. But the minute they outlawed fireworks for just the rest of us, then going to a fireworks show was horrific, because you had to go to them then. Remember, you could used to just go to your house and light the fireworks and sit and dig it. And then when they outlawed it, now I got to go to the park and go and sit in all that smoke with all those people that ordinarily you wouldn't give the time of day to, or just wouldn't allow in your gated community. Going to the movies began to suck the minute they outlawed smoking in the movie theater. Am I right about that? Nobody can remember that except me. I started smoking in the movie theater as I was 13. You know, sit there, have a weed. The only time anybody tell you to put it out is when they realize you were underage. Otherwise, you could sit off to the wings and have yourself a drink. The New York Yankees started to suck when George Steinbrenner bought them. Football started sucking when the 49ers of all teams got good. L.A. started sucking right after the hot tub was invented. And the nightly news started to suck when they started with that happy talk stuff. Hey, Marty, tell us about the weather, okay? Well, rock and roll started to suck when the first Moody Blues album came out. Watching elections on television was great. But then it hit the suck mode when they began calling them with only 1% of the vote counted. Then it's, oh, boy. Okay, we're calling New Hampshire. I've been watching for 2 minutes. What are you calling New Hampshire? Late-night television really started sucking hard when they took away the movies and gave us those talk shows. The late-night movies were cool, especially in L.A. And if I could just digress for a moment, I remember because I know all of the pitch guys for all of the car guys that were ever on TV in L.A. And there's a guy here now named Cal Worthington who does this thing, My Dog Spot. Well, that's based on a real guy. There used to be a real guy on overnight television in L.A. named Chick Lambert who would sit there with his dog, Storm. And in between commercials, they go to the commercial break, and there he was, and he'd be talking to people about, well, we'll be getting back to Hercules and the Vampire Women in a minute. But first, I want to tell you about this new Dodge. It's a beautiful car, and it's 2 a.m, and it's a live shot. So he's sitting there in a folding beach chair, and there's, his dog, Storm, or he's hosing off the hubcap, because Storm, bad dog. So I want to just tell you, Chick Lambert with his dog, Storm. Nobody remembers, just me. Okay. Is that it? I guess that's it. Oh, TV Preachers started sucking when Jim Baker got busted. That was it. That's it. That's another edition of When It Started to Suck. We'll have more here on The Phil Hendry Show as we progress. and view culture and all that crap. 1-800-449-8686. Don't forget, for our video, for our CD, and for our whatever the hell that thing is, picture disc, 877-616-7445. Back in a moment.